Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Jasper William Cartwright. Jasper is one of the founding members of the Three Black Halflings podcast, a cast member on Dimension 20's Burrow's End, and the new GM on the Rotating Heroes podcast. Jasper, welcome to the table.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is fun. That's a nice intro. I like that. Thanks.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, we love having you. I've been wanting to get you on this show ever since you and I and Eric Silver just talked on your podcast, Games and Feelings. So it's great to have you here.
Yeah. That was a good fun, and like, oh God, it feels like quite a while ago now, because I remember we had you on talking about like my first dungeon and everything. It was great. So I'm very excited to be here and on this show. So thanks for having me, Elliot. We just met, and it's been a delight.
Yes,
we did.
We just met.
A lot of that first conversation was about actual play and kind of the scope of how that is kind of coming up as an art form. And what we wanted to talk about with this conversation is not only just the future of actual play, but how to make actual play and tabletop role-playing games into a sustainable career. This is an art form that is adjacent to so many other art forms that are sustainable careers, you know, filmmaking, podcasting, music. Like, it's all right there, but somehow this one is just elusive of that. So I want to kind of dig into that. So my first question is, to what degree do you consider actual play and tabletop role-playing games your career at this point in your life?
So in answer to that one specifically, I would say it's probably, like, if I was to give it like a percentage, because I feel like that's probably the easiest way of like assigning value to this, I would probably say that at the moment it's like 60% my career, you know, and a lot of the other stuff that I'm doing is parallel to it, you know, doing a lot of like voiceover specifically for like video games or animation, which feels very kind of within the same wheelhouse, you know, as sort of podcasting and actual play and things like that. So I would probably say 60%, maybe even tilting over towards 70%, purely because I think the actual play and the sort of recognition that I've gained within that space has now started to get me jobs and work in other spheres. You know, I very fun story that I've enjoyed telling very recently is that I walked into the studio where they recorded all the stuff for Baldur's Gate 3. And so, you know, and I've been wanting to work with this studio for years, and I had like so many auditions and I never landed the part, and I've been wanting to work with them for ages. And then I booked a gig without even auditioning. I was like, my agent just called me and said, hey, the studio just asked if you can go down and just record these lines. And I was like, it's a relatively small part, but they'd love to have you. And I was like, oh my God, oh, this is incredible. Wow. And then I walked in, and as soon as I walked through the door, someone just went, brighter than the sun, swifter than the wind, which is the like tagline for my character in Burrow's End. And I was like, what is happening? And anyway, fast forward to, turns out this is the director of the game.
Whoa,
and so wow. I was like, oh, that's how I, you know. So, yeah, maybe we're kind of nudging up to like 70, 80% now, purely because I think that TTRPGs and the sort of the kind of reach and scope of my involvement within TTRPGs is now getting me work, you know, acting work and things like that. So, but that was a very surreal experience of just walking in and being like, kind of not really having any idea about this job or this gig or anything, you know, anyone's names, nothing. It was just like walking in, I kind of knew roughly the character, and then, yeah, just immediately hit with a brighter than the sun, swifter than the wind. It was pretty intense. So yeah,
that's cool.
I'm gonna land on 70%. I was being indecisive.
I love that. That feels like a great like feather in the cap kind of like legitimization of the work for like this studio that you wanted to work with for so while to have ultimately recognized you for tabletop, for your work within tabletop. That's an interesting kind of like circle moment of coming back around.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that if I can sort of, you know, to sort of jump back to the previous part of your question, Brian, about like making this into a career, if I may, it's like, I think that it kind of ties in really, really well, which is, I was actually having a conversation with someone this morning where I was saying that one of the things that I think has really set me up as a creative in any of the industries that I've worked in, because I've actually, you know, kind of like you were saying, I've kind of basically been in and around all these other assets. I've worked as a director, I've worked as a producer, I've worked, you know, I've worked on TV and film, I've worked in animation, I've worked, you know, all these kind of other areas. And I think one of the things that set me in really good stead is the fact that I haven't, at no point have I like closed off a door that's sort of opening, you know, it, like at least to sort of peek in and see what's there, you know what I mean? And I think that like that is the key, I feel like, for getting into like an industry like this, is that sometimes the temptation can be like to run in and like break the door down. And at like, at best, you get there and you're so impressive that everyone's just like, well, hey, hang around. At worst, everyone's like, hey, whoa, why did you just kick the door down? Can you just go out, step outside and wait your turn? Kind of, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's a bit like, whoa, that we have to fix the door kind of thing. Like, it's a bit of an overact analogy, but the point I'm trying to make is that, like, it's very easy within the creative space to sort of go, like, fully gung-ho into something and actually kind of not learn the lessons, not take the time, not treat that industry and that job with the respect and the kind of, like, you know, like learning all the lessons and things that you have to learn. And I really feel like something that stood me in good stead is like I've really taken the time to learn all these different facets of the creative process, to really like understand what, you know, a director does or a producer does or a podcaster does or whatever it may be, so that like when it comes to then working on something that's like a little bit outside of any of those wheelhouses, I'm kind of like, oh, I have an understanding of what's going on. And I think that it's, yeah, it's just prepared me really, really well for then, you know, moving into something a little bit different, i.e. the TTRPG industry. And I think that not feeling like I'm above any kind of work or, you know, whatever, because I think that there's definitely, you know, there could have been a time, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's just like, there could have been a time absolutely where I'm like, no, I've performed on the National Theatre stage, I'm not going to be in an actual play, you know what I mean? Like, I could have easily, you know, gone down that route. I'm sure many of my friends have probably gone and been like, well, I don't know, that feels a little, you know. And actually, I think just having the sort of thing to be like, hey, look, I'm going to give anything a go once, just to see what happens and see if I enjoy it. And having that willingness to learn and enjoy the process is like, for me, that's like the job, right? It's just like, just learn stuff. Because you don't, like you said, because this industry is so adjacent to so many other things, you don't know at which point people are going to want your skills, you know? Like, you might not be a writer in the kind of world that you come from, but maybe because you are obsessed with fantasy and you understand it in a way that no one else does, they want you to write stuff in the TTRPG industry. So you don't want to close yourself off from, like, being a writer or, you know, whatever it may be. Anyway, that was incredibly long-winded way of saying.
No. Like, I think there's a lot of
be open great to opportunities,
right.
And I think that this, even more so than like film and television or any kind of other entertainment industry, which I think this is still true of. There, I don't even think there is a front door to this industry. Like, you've got to try all. You've got to like learn this and this. You've got to be a jack of all trades, because somewhere there's a window you can crawl through and you don't know which avenue, which side of the building it's on.
Yeah. I feel like if there's a front door in this industry, it's like a door at a fairground and you're just going to walk straight into it. Like, it's not a real door. Never was. You know, that's just a brick wall with a door painted on it, my friend.
Like, well, and I think one of the things that like ends up being true of so many people in this industry is that they have to make their own doors. And I think that connects well into like what you and the folks at Three Black Halflings has done, is that you guys made your own door in. And I think that like one of the things you're saying about like having respect and understanding is because you've built this show from zero. And I'm kind of curious, like, what, because you've guessed it on things now as well, but like, what has that like creation of a show taught you about sort of sustainability when it comes to this industry?
I think one of the things that is key to remember is that like there's nothing linear about content creation or creativity generally. And I think that this like, this applies to whether you're a Hollywood actor who's just, you know, been like the it star for the last 4 or 5 years, and it tracks if you're a like small AP show that has like 10 fans. It's like, it's exactly the same thing of like, you should always and need to always find the, like, joy, and if, like, the joy, the fun, and the need to create, because I think if you lose that at any point, your audience sniffs it in a second, and you're just, like, and you're out, you know what I mean? And that's not in, like, a bad way. I just think, like, any times where I feel like Three Black Halflings or any of the projects I've done has, like, had a dip or a lull or whatever, it's always been at a time where, like, we've been burnt out or we've been unable to kind of, like, find the spark, you know, that, like, you know, the, like, of, like, what are we doing now? What's the next phase of Three Black Halflings? What's the next iteration of this show? How do we, you know, find a way to, like, reconnect to ourselves as well as the audience? And I think that, like, it's just taught me that, like, and then I think partly, you know, through getting to talk to, you know, the wonderful folks at Dimension 20 or Critical Role or whatever. And, you know, because we always had that thing in our head, like, if I could just get to that level, then it would all be fine. But it's exactly the same thing. It's just with higher stakes, because now it's like, well, if we have that dip, people lose their jobs. You know what I mean? Like, that's the difference. Whereas at Three Black Halflings, it's like, okay, well, you know, we maybe, you know, can't record that AP. You know, we have to wait an extra month to record an AP where we, you know, so we can buy that one mic or whatever. Whereas, you know, Critical Role, it's like, well, we're in trouble if the thing that we, you know, if we lose that connection or if we lose that thing now. And I just think that it's been a very interesting process, like, learning that, because I think that it's very easy to get, like, goal orientated of, like, oh, if I can just get to 10,000 downloads a month, or if I can just get to 100,000 downloads a month, or if I can just get to 100 patrons, or if I can just get to 50 patrons, or, you know, whatever it is. It's like, I think it's useful to have those things, but I think those goals should always be in support of the work, not, like, doing the work because of the goals, you know? And again, that's easy for me to say kind of now, because I feel like I've got to a point which is far beyond my wildest dreams, you know, like, in terms of those initial goals, you know, I don't think I'm so far away from those initial goals, but, like, in a way that I feel now very almost, like, liberated by that. And I think that that, like, looking back, actually, the times where I did my best was when I was less focused on those goals and I was just focused on the work. And actually trusting that the audience will come, or that even if the audience doesn't come, the people will come who want to make your thing a success. I think, like, that's what we have with Three Black Halflings. It's like, I don't think Three Black Halflings has ever been as big a show as people think it is. You know what I mean? Like, the perception of us is almost bigger than the actual reality of our show, because really good, wonderful, lovely people who are in the industry recognize what we were doing and what we are doing and want to uplift us and support us and talk about us and, you know. And so it's like, there are multiple ways to do it. And I think it's very easy to be like, we just have to be as online as possible and just constantly posting on social media. And, you know, and, like, that's all really, really useful. But, like, hot tip, Twitter is dead. No matter how much effort you put into it, you get nothing out of it now. And it sucks. Because I finally got 10,000 followers. God damn it. God damn it.
Yeah. Ellie and I have often lamented that between his game design and, like, these podcasts, if we'd done this, like, 5 years ago when Twitter was still relevant, it'd be so much easier.
Honestly, I think about it now. The kind of engagement I get on Twitter now, I would be Dwayne The Rock Johnson if this was 5 years ago. Like, I'm getting, like, sort of like to follower ratio is huge. I'm dropping bombs out here, Brian. And what do I get for it? I get naughty bots in my comments is what I get.
Just
like tens of them. Are you saying
that's not what you wanted? You didn't want the naughty bots?
No! You don't want the ass and bio bots?
No, but if I'd have got the ass and bio bots, again, 5 years ago, when I'm single and not a dad, maybe I'd have appreciated that a bit more, you know what I mean? But now I'm just like, this is deeply inappropriate. Get away from me. You know what I mean? It's crazy. That's crazy. And something tells me they're not even real women that want to show me their ass in the
something
bio.
Something tells me.
I don't know for sure. I haven't clicked on any of them to find out, but I have a hunch.
Brian, I'm so sorry. They're not real. They're not. I'm so sorry. It's okay, buddy.
But what's the point of anything?
That's a fascinating question.
What's the point?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question that we should really dig into.
Let's really dig into that. No, I mean, I want to really highlight something you said in there, because I think that, you know, we talk about this word sustainability a lot, and it means a lot of different things. One is, you know, financial sustainability, career sustainability, giving people a path and a job and a way to make a living. But I think one of the things you talked about, which is one that is a perspective shift that I actively fight to have, and like I think is like a practice that you have to have as a creative, is that the work is the part that you need to be fulfilled by and enjoy, and the work is the work, I think, is like sometimes the way people put it. It's just like it's a really relevant conversation right now that people are talking about a lot with like generative AI, where it's like the point isn't having a pretty picture. The point is 100%. Drawing, or the point is painting, or the point is writing. And
the point is the connection to the work, like you putting your humanity into the work, and then that work being a reflection of humanity. That's the point. You know what I mean? Like that's the point at which it means something. 100%. Yeah.
And I think that's so key to this idea of sustainability, is that for people in actual play and TTRPG, like the goal is not as important as the work. Like you have to love making the being on an actual play. Like you can't just be working towards the goal of I want to be as big as Critical Role, or I want to be as big as Dimension 20. And I think that's a really key thing. And I think that's what people, to circle this back to Three Black Halflings, I think you're saying like people think Three Black Halflings is quote unquote bigger than it actually is. But I think that's because the three of you love the work, and that's clear. Like you love the work of making that show. And I think it gives this like you can feel the air of like this is emotionally, creatively, fulfillment sustainable for these three people. And I think that sends a signal that like people respond to. There's not a question in there. I'm just distilling thoughts.
No. I think it's like it's so true. And I think it's something that I literally thought this the other day. I literally, I want to say a few weeks ago, maybe even last week, properly started working on a TTRPG that I've wanted to make for years. And I mean, literally last week. And I think it purely is that it's so hard, I think, as a creative, if you're not coming from, this is why privilege, right, is such a huge part of the creative industry, and why quite often when you get like Nepo babies, quote unquote, they're actually sick at the job. Right? John David Washington is an absolutely unbelievable actor, right? Denzel Washington's kid. He is sublime. Can I swear on this podcast? Am I allowed to
just
like, I mean, okay, cool. He's fucking incredible. And the reason he's incredible is because he's never had this headspace, the worry about like the finances or like whether the jobs are coming, or you know what I mean? Like he's in there just auditioning, and he just has pure 100% love of the love of the job, the creative, you know, that thing. Whereas everyone else, we're operating at like 80% stress, anxiety, worry in a big ball. And then we get this 20% nugget at the end, which is like making the actual play, like, you know, or like being in the actual play or whatever it is. And I think that like, it's so maddening to me to look at the success of my career and how basically it feels like all I'm doing is condensing my work down into smaller and smaller time periods so that I can then stretch out the rest of my time over I can fill the rest of my time with more of the work, quote unquote, which is more fun, which is more like freeing and enjoyable, and you know what I mean, like the amount of times where I worried that I'd just broken like myself, that I was like, oh, I'm not creative, I can't do it. And I'm like, no, I'm just stressed. Like I'm literally like, the reason I'm not having any ideas right now is because I'm just stressed. But it feels so kind of like icky that like how that's always the last thing that we worry about, right? Like, and there probably is a world where like if we just didn't worry about the stress, for you know, gave yourself a week off, just focus on the work, you'd probably come out of that week with something that you could really do something with. But it's so hard to switch that bit off. And I've been in that place where it's like, even now I find it hard to switch it off, and I have much less of it than I used to. You know what I mean? It's like, I really do feel like it's one of those, like, the privilege of being successful is just having the time to work on the jobs. Like, genuinely, like, that's the key part of being, of having any kind of success in the creative industry, is just having time to actually do the thing.
That is such a good line of the privilege of being successful is the ability to have time to do the job.
Yeah, genuinely. That's honestly what it feels like. It's like the difference between having, like, rushing your thing 5 minutes before the due date, or having it done 2 weeks ago and you're already on the next thing. Like, that's the difference. Like, yeah, that's what it feels like, at least for me. I'm sure that other people will feel it differently, but, like, that's absolutely what it feels like for me.
Yeah, no, it's like the idea that if we... And I feel like this gets talked about when people talk about, like, alternate models of society, where it's like, if everybody had enough money to live, you know, have a roof over their head and eat and not, like, worry about their bills, we would have so much more art and creativity, because people would have the mental space to do it.
Yeah, 100%.
I did also just want to add in the start of that section of this conversation reminded me of something someone told me once that still haunts me to this day, that is the reward for good work is more work.
Yes.
And it's absolutely true, but it's one of those truths that you don't want to hear it when you hear it. There's never a good time to hear that one.
As long as it's work that you enjoy, then it's fine. If it's work that you don't enjoy, then it can be a pretty...
That's true. It's really bleak in
a corporate environment when reward for good work is more work.
That's a great, like, tagline for, like, a triangle agency actual play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So I'm gonna bring us back a bit, because I want to talk about rotating heroes a little bit, and I think that there's something interesting. And I'm going to just keep using this word sustainability, because I think it's the word of the day. And I think there's something interesting to the idea of, we recently spoke with our friend Super Dylan, who took over the One Shot podcast, and you've taken sort of this GM role over for Zach Oyama. And I think that there's something to the state of the industry and actual play getting to a point where the key to the sustainability of that show is a change of guard. And I'm curious how you sort of see that responsibility as, like, taking over as a GM of a show that previously existed, and, like, how you think about keeping the show running as, like, the new, you know, guy in the chair.
Yeah. Well, this is really interesting. I think the nice thing for me is, like, you know, it's still Zach's show, you know? Well, I'd say it's like Zach and Jasper's show. You know what I mean? It's like, we kind of share the kind of footprint on it now. And I think that you're absolutely right. I think it was a case of me coming in. It felt like a really like a good kind of marriage of convenience, in a sense that, like, you know, it was actually a fun story, a slightly drunken night in a restaurant that looks like a barrel in LA,
where all good stories begin.
yeah, exactly. And there's a giant dog that you can sit in the garden of said barrel restaurant. Everyone who lives or has been to LA knows exactly the place I'm talking about. I think it's called Eilauer or something. But anyway, I was there with Brian Murphy from Dimension 20, and he was basically, like, being lovely and giving me the kind of the gas up of, like, hey man, like, you're, like, on Dimension 20 now, you're, like, one of us. You know, you need to, like, not be afraid to, like, reach out to people and, like, work with us and, you know, whatever. And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. And then he was like, you really like GMing and like producing. And I was like, yeah, actually, I love doing those things. And he was like, you know who doesn't like doing those things? Zach. And I was like, oh, okay. I wonder if, like, I could do those things and he could do the things that he's really good at. You know, he really enjoys doing and he's good at and stuff. And so it just felt like a very, like, convenient thing. And it was a show that was, like, so popular. People absolutely loved it. You know, there was still over 1,500 people just sat on the Patreon hoping it would come back. They weren't being charged or anything, but, like, they were just, like, they basically agreed to, like, if the show comes back, you can just charge me because we want to be here to, like, you know, as and when the show comes back, etc. And so it always felt like it kind of should come back, because there was a base there and there was, you know... And I think it was really interesting how actually, I think part of the thing for Zach and for me coming in is feeling like the industry has moved on from when that show started, from when most of these shows started, to the standard, the quality, the sort of general involvement of a show is just, it's more now, you know. And even with the, you know, the name of Zach Oyama and how little my name moves that needle, but, you know, like, even with that, it really felt like, okay, if we're going to bring the show back, we have to, like, bring the show back. Let's, like, make it feel new. Let's give it, like, a lick of paint. Let's make it feel like it's, you know, we're really moving it in a direction. And a lot of that felt like, narratively, on me, was like, okay, I, like, studied. When I say I studied the previous 7 arcs of Rotating Heroes, I mean, like, I can tell you, like, NPCs, the episode they show up, like, the where they, you know, where they travel to and from, the name of their cousin. Like, it was, because I really felt like if I'm going to bring this back and make it satisfying and not have it be a thing where all of the audience go, oh, it's not Zach DMing anymore. Like, he's playing, which is good, but, like, oh, I liked him DMing. The only way that's not, where we don't get that reaction, is if I come in and I prove to these people, hey, I really love this thing too, and I'm gonna, like, you know, this is why, like, I'm a trusted, you know. And I think I even did, like, an opening monologue for the beginning of arc 8, which is the first arc that I DM'd for, basically sort of saying, like, even though there's a new storyteller in the seat, it's the same world, it's the same people, it's the same things that you love, because it just felt really important to me to I think, to go to your point about sustainability, I think I could have easily come in and been like, no, I'm taking over now. I want to do a new world. I want to do this. I want to make it, you know. And there's, like, of course, the stuff that I'd love to do with that show, and maybe eventually I will, but, like, I feel like I've got to earn it first. I've got to really, like, you know, I want that group of people who have, especially the ones that are, like, stuck around and were like, we want to be here regardless, you know. It really felt like I've got to pay homage to, like, them, and the fact that they have dedicated time and whatever to listen to the show, and they love the show in the same way that I would probably feel if someone was to, you know, take over a show that I love, or, you know what I mean, like, to, you know, come in and redo something or whatever else. I would probably want them to handle it with the same kind of care and love and whatever. And I think that kind of goes back to the thing I was saying earlier, just about, like, I think finding a level of sustainability, like, respecting the work, is just, like, so important. And, like, Zach is amazing for that as well, because I think that anytime it doesn't feel like we're kind of, like, getting that, like, he's like in solution mode, like, we're, like, figuring it out together, like, how can we, like, you know, we've, like, edited little parts of episodes and stuff to really make sure that it feels like it's meshed together with the rest of the world and that it all fits. And, you know, and I think actually having that attention to detail, and one of the key lessons that I've learned from Zach was the fact that he's so much more aware of the space that he occupies within the TTRPG space than I am, because I'm not, up until very recently, I didn't think that anyone cared. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was a bit like, it doesn't matter. Like, I can just tweet whatever. I can just put out there whatever. It doesn't, you know what I mean? And then, like, Zach's like, no. Like, people expect really good stuff from you now. So, like, don't, like, obviously you don't have to put, like, that much pressure on yourself, but also, there's no reason that you have to fall below that. Like, you know, you can keep doing that. It's just about having a different kind of, like, attention to detail kind of thing, and not, like, saying, oh, well, it's, you know, it's fine, I'll just put it out and see what happens. It's like, no. If you're going to put something out, be aware that you're, like, that's what you're doing. And that was, you know, a really important, like, learning curve for me to be like, oh, yeah. People really care about this. I need to be, you know, I need to make sure that it's, like, at least as good as I can make it. You know what I mean? Even if it's not, like, the best thing that I've ever done.
A thing that we talk about a lot on this show is, like, one of our buzzwords is intentionality. And the more intentional you are with something that you're making, it's just something anyone who is listening or watching or experiencing the thing that you're making can pick up in a heartbeat. Like, you just know it's there. You know when it's there and you know when it's not there. And it's the thing you can't fake. And it's also the thing that does most of the work for you. If you go in with a clear plan, you execute it to the best of your ability, and then you present it, it's like, great, I know what they were trying to do. To what degree they were successful, you know, you can talk about that till the cows come home. But I know that they were trying to do something. I respect the passion and the care that they put into this thing. I know that it was given to me with, it wasn't just slapped together and thrown you know, in a package like a bad present. It was wrapped for me.
This is a really good example, right? Where I generally dislike the online kind of fervor around like owning a property, like fans kind of getting extremely angry about like the direction that a particular IP is headed in. Because at the end of the day, sorry to break it to you guys, Disney owns that. You don't own that, right? Like, yes, you've invested time and I get it, but like ultimately it's like their thing to do with whatever they want to do. You know, Disney's not going to come into your house and tell you which lampshades to use or which throw cushions. Like, you know what I mean? Like that, like generally that's not sort of acceptable, and neither is you getting extremely angry at a director online because, you know, someone had a colored lightsaber that you didn't like, right? Like that I generally dislike. However, I think the flip side of that, and one that I think you're absolutely well within your rights to get angry about, because I did, is Game of Thrones, because what was all the narrative that came out of the final season of Game of Thrones was that it was rushed. Was that the studio wanted to give them more time, the actors wanted to give it more time, the showrunners had stuff that they wanted to do, and they had plans for a Star Wars thing over here, and the whole thing was that they didn't respect the work. Like, ultimately, that was what it was. They didn't actually give it, you know, and I think all of us, the audience, after like episode 3, we're like, hold on, something smells off here. You know, you were watching the way that the cast were rocking up to red carpet events, all looking a bit like, you know, it was just like, oh, there wasn't the respect of the work, and that's why it sucked. If we'd have had that same final season, but all the intention from the cast all the way up to the showrunners to the crew, everyone was like, we gave this everything, guys. We really put our effort. I guarantee you. It would probably be in the same realm that the prequels are now kind of living in a little bit of love, the Star Wars prequels. How, like, there's, like, almost, like, this weird kind of full circle thing where everyone's loving Hayden Christensen again. But I think it's because we're kind of really seeing now Hayden Christensen really gave a shit. Like, he really tried, and he really, like, for all of the bad acting claims and whatever, like, this guy put his, like, butt into this thing, and we all kind of were a bit mean to him, you know what I mean? And I think he's now getting love because we're now seeing that intention. We're now seeing, you know, the fact that, oh, it wasn't just George Lucas trying to sell toys, it was, like, genuinely this was, like, his vision for the world and what Star Wars would be, and yada, 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 you know? And so I do think that that thing of intention and that people will sniff it out is so true, and I think the pitfall is thinking that you're small enough that no one will care. Because if there is, like, if you have one fan, that one fan cares. So have intention. I think that's a really like, nice way to put it.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a respect for the audience that should happen at every level. And I think that I get fired up about the Game of Thrones example, but I think that is also...
The most telling thing about the Game of Thrones thing was that at the end of the final episode, there was no one in the world who was like, that was great, let's start from the beginning again. Whereas, zero, like, people. The end of Breaking Bad, people were like, you know what, let's go back to episode one and, like, start again. Yeah. Like, there were rewatch parties.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, they were like, eh, okay.
No, in fact, actively, I think me and my wife were planning a rewatch.
Yeah, you know, same.
But and then cancelled it. We were like, no, we're not gonna, no, because it's disappointing now. I wouldn't even recommend starting Game of Thrones.
I know,
which is nuts. But it's hard to recommend. It's hard to recommend. Because you're like, hey, let me tell you, if you've ever seen someone shit the bed, this is exactly what it looks like. You know what I mean? Like, it's rough. The ending is rough.
Yeah, and I feel like what, in addition to, like, losing the respect for the work, I think there was a loss of respect for the audience, or, like, maybe not a loss of respect, but, like, a taking for
granted. We know better than you,
and, like, you know, like, millions of people are going to watch this no matter what, and I think that's, like, the way it connects back to actual play is it's just, like you said, like, never take your audience for granted. Like, everything you do is for them. I mean, it's for your own creative fulfillment and whatever, but the reason, like, you ultimately continue existing is because somebody gives a shit about what you're making. I love that Brian Murphy said that to you, where it was like, people care now about what you make, and, like, that's really powerful.
I was watching a roundtable thing with Adam Driver. And it was so funny because, like, all the other actors were looking at him like, I don't know, man, I'm pretty sure it's about me. But, like, Adam Driver just seems like a very real guy. And he said something that I think is so true of how I think about acting personally. And again, other people have different opinions and that's totally fine. But, like, I genuinely believe that it is not my job to feel an emotion. It is my job to make you feel an emotion. Like, you as you being the audience, right? And it's exactly the same with actual play, is that, like, my job, and this is probably my, like, my gripe generally if I listen to just, like, an actual play, you know, out there, is, like, I will see people, like, in their bag, in their feelings, and they're crying on stream, and it's like, whoa, and I'm like, sweet, but I can't understand a word you're saying right now. I can't, like, I don't know why you're crying. We don't even know this bit of backstory that this connects to. It's like, this is absolutely fine. Look, I'm not going to, like, shame anyone for doing this. It's not like it's a bad thing. But, like, in terms of, like, your job trying to connect, you need to connect to the audience and make them cry. Not, like, you're not doing this to make yourself, you know what I mean? And, hey, look, if you're doing an actual play with your friends and all you want to do is just have fun and just, and, like, act your little heart out and that's your job, like, hell, please, go and do it. But, like, if there's ever a question of, like, oh, why isn't this connected to people? Why aren't people enjoying this performance? Because I really feel like I'm doing it and I'm giving them, you know, that's probably why, is that it's more of an insular exploration of this thing than an external one. And it has to be external. Like, I've seen so many incredible actors on screen, on television, on stage, and I'm like, I'm getting nothing, man. And maybe people feel the same way about me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm pursuing that thing, but I don't know if I'm, you know what I mean? You can never truly know if you're, like, landing it or whatever. But, like, that's always the, like, thing for me, you know? Whenever I'm, like, you know, I used to come off stage or whatever and be like, oh, man, I didn't cry tonight. Oh, I guess I wasn't in it. But then, like, we'd have a standing ovation and I'd be like, oh, so I guess, like, it, you know, it connected to them even if I wasn't necessarily feeling it. And that's actually ultimately more important. And I think it's the same with actual play. It's like, what's the most interesting choice that will engage the audience and bring them into this world and bring them on this journey with us, rather than what's the thing that feels coolest for me or feels, you know, most active for me, you know?
Rom-com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom. Or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
Speak into the void. You never know who may be listening. In the Annie Award-winning Void 1680 AM, you take on the role of a late-night radio DJ. Use a standard poker deck and a six-sided die to build your playlist, interact with callers, and assemble a show that expresses something about why you love the music that you do. Void 1680 AM includes rules for single session and ongoing play, so you can develop the relationships of your DJ with your callers over time. You can even join the growing community of affiliate DJs whose shows are broadcast live on air and on YouTube. Shop Void 1680 AM now at bannerless.games/shop and take 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON.
There was a piece of really good acting advice that I want to say was Robin Williams gave it out, but it was, if you're on
probably
stage...
I felt like he was popping off gems left and right.
Oh, left and right, like... left and right. But he said something along the lines of, if you're on stage and you are trying to portray sadness and you cry, the audience no longer has to. But if you are holding it in, like, there's nothing sadder than seeing someone desperately trying not to cry. And then, like, by holding it in... now the audience is given permission to, I can experience this emotion because this person's not. The second, and this is true with drama and comedy as well, it's like, if you don't break, the audience will break for you, and probably not when you want them to. Which is why in like scary movies or in dramas, when there's not a break of levity at some point, all of a sudden you get a laugh from the audience where you don't necessarily expect it or want it, because you haven't given them the control and the permission to experience an emotion. You've just been throwing emotion at them.
Or it's like a stand-up who laughs at themselves too much and you don't, then you end up like not.
If you're telling a joke and you laugh, that's my biggest problem of myself. This is the biggest problem. I have a lot of problems. But like, one of the things I hate most about myself is that I love telling jokes, and I think I'm a pretty good storyteller in general, but the second I find something funny, I will laugh at it, which means I laugh at all of my own jokes, which diminishes them by 100%. Like when I see someone like,
I think there's something, I think you can toe the line between being endearing as well at that stage where you're like, you know, as long as you're like in with the audience on the joke, then I think it's, you know what I mean? Then it's absolutely fine. And I think there is definitely something kind of endearing about someone who is like, you know, really enjoying the process of what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like if you were like, if you're doing the kind of like, I'm just gonna laugh after a joke to signal to you to laugh. That's, I think, more the issue we're talking about here. If you're like genuinely finding something funny, you know what I mean? Then I think there's a certain level where it's like, you know, oh, this is like, he's having a really good time, and that's the thing that becomes infectious. Even if it's not necessarily laughter, it's like, oh man, this guy's having a great time, I'm having a great time, we're all having a great time, you know?
Elliot, you tell me, which side of that line am I toned?
Oh, I find you endearing, obviously. I spend a lot of time with you. But I think you've got, I think part of it is key to having a good infectious laugh, which I'd say you have an infectious laugh.
Exactly, there you go. That's
I wasn't planning on just you guys hyping me up right now, but I'll take it.
That wasn't what I was going for.
I do have a slight, like a just a little reversal question though, because I do think this is interesting talking about the idea of sustainability, because I genuinely do think something that is fascinating is like self-criticism and where self-criticism is useful and where it is like harmful and unnecessary. Like, I don't know how like you guys feel like you manage that, because obviously, you know, you just straight up came out with some self-criticism there, Brian. So I'm like wondering whether that's something that you generally feel like you kind of deal with, or is it just like a, you know what I mean? Like, because I feel like as creative, it's so easy, right? It's just so easy for us to be like, everything I make is bad. Everything I make is terrible. Ignore it. You know what I mean?
First off, I just want to give you props for somehow bringing us back on track. That was phenomenal.
Are you an interviewer or something?
I've done it a couple times. You said, let's bring it back around.
And I was like, he's not going to be able to bring it back around. I know where we are.
And then he did.
No, but I feel like when we're... Elliot, I think we've talked about this, but just speaking for myself, I am probably the most... I think this is true for anyone who works in any creative field. If you're good at it and if you have any kind of self-awareness, I'm probably the most critical of my work out of anybody. I might not see all the correct problems, but I see a greater percentage of problems than other people might. Because there'll often be times where Elliot will say like, oh, did you notice this thing is wrong? And I'll be like, I never would have noticed that. But I can also be like, hey, did you notice... at time codes, this, and this, I sounded a little weird. And he's like, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like nothing makes you more fucking acutely aware of your own breathing than editing a podcast with you on it. Oh, it's like,
my problem is I've got like a very like stuffy nose, and Elliot knows this now because he edits this podcast. It's just a lot of me going...
The amount of, I drive myself crazy editing my own shows where I'm just like, oh, please stop making that noise. Please.
I will say, like editing your own voice for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours on end is the best way to get over caring about your voice. Because at a certain point, it's just like, for a while, it's like, oh, I sound awful. I hate the way my voice sounds. And then at a certain point, you're like, this is just raw data. I just got to sift
through. Yeah. This is just zeros and ones, and it means nothing to me anymore. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. But I think, I don't know, I find self-criticism to be productive to an extent, but I need external. I need to externalize it because, like Brian said, like, I think I generally know when something's wrong, but I need a confirmation from someone. I need to be like, hey, I think this is the biggest problem I'm having. Like, is that right? Or is it something else?
The thing that I'm always looking for, and I think I've said this on this podcast, and Elliot, I've definitely said it to you, is advice I got one time that if someone tells you something isn't working, they're right. If someone tells you how to fix it, they're wrong. And that's often what I'm looking for in like criticism. Cause I, you know, I've got a lot of friends who, hey, I've got a lot of friends. I've got a lot of friends that I'll send like early cuts of things to. Like we're working on a new show that we're going to be announcing soon. And I sent it out to a bunch of different people. And I gave them very specific asks of like, I just want to know, did you have fun? Did you like this part? Were the characters clear? Was there anything that distracted you? Because those are the big problems that I'm worried about. Like, I'm worried about if there's something that takes you out of it. But it's very hard to get good external criticism if you give someone carte blanche, because A, people are cognizant of your feelings. It's tough to criticize art that you haven't had your hands in the guts of for anybody. Even like, that's why professional critics who are good at it is such a talent. But by asking some of those more specific questions that just check the box of, is this working, is often the most helpful thing. Because if I ask, you know, if anything's too specific, it doesn't help, because people are going to give me advice on how to fix it and they're probably wrong because they don't have the full picture. But if you say, hey, did this work for you? That's a pretty good binary question.
Or it's like,
ask.
Hey, I'm trying to achieve X. Did I achieve that? You know what I mean? Like,
100%.
Like I kind of, there's a point where I feel like I almost wouldn't care if someone was like, oh, I don't think I liked it. I'd be like, okay, but that's fine. But did I achieve X? You know what I mean? Because like, not everything I'm making is designed to be generally appealing, or, well, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it might be that I'm going after a very specific audience, or I'm making something for kids, or I'm making, you know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't really care if you as an adult found it boring. I'm trying to know whether you found the tone of it uplifting and positive, because that's what I'm trying to convey to kids. You know what I mean? So like, I do think that I think that's a really, really astute point, that actually being specific about what you're asking. Because also, you're going to get answers to a bunch of questions that you just didn't need answers for. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to, and then it's going to be in your head and it's going to be messing with your process. And you'll be like, I wish no one had said that to me. You know what I mean? Or when someone goes like, oh, it's kind of like X. And I'm like, great. Now that's all I'm going to think about. Like, I'm just going to sit in there and thinking, right, I've just made a ripoff of this show, and like, now I feel like the whole idea is bust. And it's not that, like, that's just the nature of art. You're always gonna be treading on someone's toes. That's kind of a part of it you have to get over, you know.
It is also like a kindness to someone, like, as the artist asking for criticism, it's a kindness to be specific with what you're doing. Because when you say like, what do you think of this, that's like a terrible, you know, if I say like, hey, Jasper, what do you like about actual play, it's like, it's almost a rude question because it's so broad. Like, I'm not giving you anything to work with. Whereas if I say, hey, you were on Burrow's End, what was your favorite part about Burrow's End, and why did you think, you know, it, make it more and more and more specific, then it's a kindness. It's like asking like, hey, what do you want for dinner tonight? I don't know. What do you want? It's like, this conversation's going to take 30 minutes and no one's going to be happy.
And no one's going to be happy at the end of it. We're going to end up in a halfway house. We're going to have cold tacos.
Exactly.
So thrilled. And I think it's just like, but the reason why I brought up the thing about like the self-criticism, or, you know, is that I, again, feel like it's something that I've been on a journey with recently. And actually Burrow's End was the kind of big turning point for me, which was like, I was like, I remember not necessarily like the first couple episodes, I remember feeling like, man, I feel like I'm doing a bad job, like a really, really bad job. And I think part of it is just taking actual play and putting it in a scenario where there is a full crew. There is like Hollywood grade cameras, Hollywood grade lighting. There is directors. There is a director. There is a series director. There is like the dude who like created the whole thing sat across you acting in scenes with you, you know? And it's like, it feels like unless you're doing something like incredible, I'm like, surely this sucks. Like, I don't, you know? And I think that actually What I realized in that moment was I was trying to be overly critical of myself to protect myself because I was so, because I hadn't done anything on that scale or certainly like in that format. I was trying to protect myself from the inevitable like backlash of the internet, like, can't believe they invited Jasper in. This guy sucks. And actually what that then meant was like, I just didn't enjoy the thing for like the first few episodes as much as I should have done. Like by the end of it, I was like, I'm having the best time of my life, you know? And I was like, that's where I should have been the whole time. That's where I should have been the whole time. But that self-criticism, using that as like a barrier to be like, you know, to protect myself, then meant that I didn't kind of embrace fully the experience and everything like that. And so I think that like there comes a point where it's very easy to be self-deprecating, you know, as an Englishman. It's something that is like in my lifeblood, you know what I mean? And I don't think I'll ever get rid of it. But I really learned the value of actually like, okay, how do I do this constructively? And when do I need to just shut the hell up and just get on with the work? You know what I mean? Stop making excuses for myself and own my work. Because actually, genuinely, by the time it came out, I was like, I'm ready to own this. Like, however this comes out, however this gets received, I'm owning it because I did my best job. And actually, by the end of it, I'm really genuinely proud of the arc my character went on and, you know, everything like that. And it was summed up perfectly by someone saying to me, it was like the best compliment I've got about Borough's End, where they were like, you and like the crew, like meaning the whole, you know, there were scenes in that show which had me as emotional as I've ever been watching a show or a TV, you know, and you did all of that completely improvised. And that was a moment where I went, do you know what? You're absolutely fucking right. Like, you know what I mean? We actually did kind of, you know, there was points, we fucking nailed it, you know? And I, because I think it's so hard otherwise to like, what's the point? Like, you know what I mean? Like, to a point where I'm like, well, like, what's the point of me doing it if I'm just going to sit there and be hypercritical about it? Because it's not going to change. I'm not going to be able to, like, message the editors and be like, hey, can you cut that bit out? Can you change? You know what I mean? Because they're not going to, you know what I mean? They've made the thing, it's done. So now it's like, okay, enjoy, like use the helpful bit of self-criticism to learn from it so that if you get another opportunity again, you'll be more prepared and you know what I mean? All that stuff. But otherwise, God damn it, just enjoy something that you made, man. Like, yeah. You know, like, just embrace it and be like, hey, good job, dude. Like, well done. Was that so hard, saying well done to yourself? Probably not.
I love that you found that in the process. I'm glad that it wasn't like, you know, leaving the dome for the last time and being like, I never got to enjoying a moment of it. I'm glad you like found it after the first
so much of that is down to the crew and the, like, you know, it's down to like Carlos Luna, the series director, down to Michael Scharbach, down to Abria, you know, down to Brennan. Like, they could not have been more supportive and more and embraced what I was doing, like, more. Like, they were so helpful in that creative process. It was, I literally describe it as, and it is still easily the most fulfilling creative process that I've ever had, purely because of how much, and this is one of those, again, one of those things talking about like respecting the work and everything. I cannot tell you, and I cannot speak highly enough of how seriously every single person on that production treats it. Like, Michael Scharbach, the director, does a speech before every single time they record an episode of Dimension 20 about what the show means to who, why it's important, why they still make it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, like that is fresh in every single person's head right before we hit record. And I think that is such an important part of it. And I think it's part of the reason why that show is as successful and is as popular as it is. Yes, they've got the lights. Yes, they've got the camera. Yes, they've got budget, etc. But they didn't always have that. Like, I've spoken to them and, like, let me tell you, like, the Fancy High, like, the first year of Fancy High, that budget was tiny, you know, comparatively to what it is now. And it's like, and but I think that they've never lost sight of, like, the what it means and the whys. And genuinely, I've never had an experience like that before where I felt that cared for and that, like, supported. Where people were so, genuinely so intrigued as to what, you know, what my process was. Or, you know, like, the amount of times Carlos would come after me after a shoot and be like, this moment, oh my God, like, when you did this, this was amazing. It's re-teeing, it's making me think of this. It's making me think, you know, he's giving me the audience perspective live. And like, you just don't get that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you just, like, in nearly any other pursuit or thing, you maybe just get someone come up to you and be like, great job today. But to have someone critically think about your process whilst you're in the middle of it and support you, oh my God. Again, it kind of goes back to that thing of where privilege is the thing that unlocks the higher level. You know what I mean? Like, the privilege of having a Carlos Luna on set, it, you know what I mean? I went from here to like, somewhere I didn't even think I could get, you know, probably performance-wise in that setting, etc., you know? So, yeah, it was an absolutely incredible process.
Sort of building off of that and working towards a close, I think that going back to something you said towards the beginning of, you know, not finding yourself hyper-focused on goals, like climbing the mountains or whatever, I think that, like, a lot of people in actual play, like, see Dimension 20 as one of the, like, mountains to climb of our industry. Like, a lot of people are like, man, I just, like, I want to be on Dimension 20. Like, once I do that, I will be, like, fulfilled and happy, whatever. And
it's true, guys. I got to be honest with you. It's fucking true. I was on it, and it's been sunshine and rainbows ever since.
I do want to ask about the other side of it a little bit. Like, how are you keeping, you know, the momentum of your career and, like, your personal sustainability up after you've been on what is one of those goals that people can find themselves caught up in? Like, there's another side of that. Like, eventually you drive home and the season's over. What is life on the other side, and how are you keeping it sustainable?
Well, Elliot, let me tell you the first thing I did. First thing I did is cry. Like, the second I realized it was over and I was like, that was done, I cried. I was like, I was genuinely on the last day. First day, I was so emotional, like, to the point where I think Erica was worried that I wasn't going to be able to record, because I was genuinely so fucking overwhelming. Like, I was so excited on the first day of recording that I cried three times, because I was just like, I'm just so happy to be here and this is so cool. And, like, I generally think that Erica at one point was like, is he going to be okay? But then, you know, I went to drama school. I trained for this. As soon as those cameras were rolling, I was like, okay, I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm ready. I was like, whatever. But I think it's a really interesting point. And I do think that if there was ever a time where I was going to, like, actually aggressively hype myself, is that I do honestly think that for me, I've always been very, very good at, like, thinking what's next. Is like, from the second I got cast in Burrow's End, I was already thinking, okay, like, how do I maximize this opportunity for myself? And I think that that's partly just because, like, generally I feel quite, like, I am quite business orientated in that way. Like, I find it very easy to motivate myself on the, like, okay, I'm very comfortable with the, like, with the work, you know. I'm very comfortable with, like, researching a character, coming up with a character, finding a voice, finding a physicality, finding, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very comfortable in all of that. The stuff that kind of, like, scares me or slows me down is the business stuff. And so I like to kind of, like, forecast that a little bit so that I can kind of feel like that's somewhat taken care of. And I do feel like one of the things I made sure that I did was that I was ready to maximize whatever that was on the other side. And I think that, like, I don't know generally, but I feel like I've done a relatively decent job. Like, I'm very, very happy with the, like, way things have gone since. And I feel like it has opened up a lot of doors for me. And, like, generally I've kind of been ready to, like, seize those opportunities as they've come. And that doesn't mean that I haven't made mistakes or there hasn't been missteps or there hasn't been things that I wish had worked out differently. But, like, I was at least prepared for, like, what that was. And it kind of meant that, like, being prepared for, like, all eventualities, like, I was pretty prepared that, like, hey, look, unless you're one of the intrepid heroes, it, you know, the kind of, like, the levels of excitement is an order of magnitude different, right? You know what I mean? It's not like, it was like Burrow's End was doing really well, but they dropped a teaser for Fantasy High in the middle of Burrow's End, and that was like, Gaw! You know, like, it was like a completely different yet level, and I was like, okay, humbling. That was, okay, humbling, good. You know, like, seeing the reaction to that trailer versus, like, and I was like, okay. But I think I was, again, it was, like, about being realistic, being prepared for whatever that was, however that manifested itself, and then being like, okay, what is the next thing? And so actually it was literally, like, that chat I had with Brian Murphy about Rotating Heroes was one of the nights I had off from shooting Burrow's End. So literally on one of the nights off I had from shooting Burrow's End, I then met Murph, and the next day sent the email. I actually think I sent an email to Zach, to be honest, when I was like pretty drunk that night, if I think about it. Don't do that. That's a bad, that was inadvisable. I could have definitely waited until the morning and just sent it perfectly sober. But anyway, I like sent that email and Zach replied. And so like the wheels for like that were in motion, like before I'd even finished the Burrow's, you know what I mean? And then that became, you know, when Burrow's End came out, we'd done on like a few months of work and prep and everything so that we could then announce Rotating Heroes when Burrow's End was coming out. And so it kind of felt like there was like a, you know, there's always been like a good kind of like jumping from one thing to another thing to, you know, and like generally I feel like I've gotten into a good flow of that. And it's like weird, like the last few weeks, the reason I've started working on a TTRPG is because I've suddenly gone, oh, I don't know what the next thing is. Which has actually been really exciting for the first time, because I'm not in a place where I'm panicking that there won't be a next thing. Because as much as I doubt myself and I don't think I'm that great, other people for some reason do, and they keep hiring me for stuff. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'll keep going. You know what I mean? If you're happy with it, you know, I'll keep going. And that feels like a huge privilege. Like that, I genuinely can't tell you and express to you what that like, as someone who has felt like they have like clawed their way to like every opportunity, to be in a place where like, oh man, a couple opportunities are just like landing for me. Huh. Whew, like, oh my God, it feels, you know what I mean? It feels really fucking good.
You're finally able to just walk in the door rather than find the window you got to crawl through to get
in.
Yeah,
truly. Like to be at the window, tapping on it like a crazy person with my resume in hand, being like, yeah.
And a guy just opens the door from the side. Is like, you just come in this way.
Come in this way, man. It's fine.
You're not a window guy anymore.
Yeah. Like, but it's so interesting that I think that, so to bring it full circle, being the window guy means that you miss the dude on the side door who's like, hey, come in here. You know what I mean? And I think that's what I was trying to say at the beginning about being open, is that like being the dude who's like pressed up against the window, whilst I completely think that sometimes you have to be aggressive and you have to really pursue the things that you want, you just can't be so single focused that you miss other things that are going on. Because like nearly every single time in my life, I felt like things are going in one direction, or they're doing one thing, or, you know, whatever it is, something just comes in from left of field and it's exactly what I needed, or it's exactly what I wanted, or I was exactly ready for that thing to come along and to like embrace, you know, and to like take that thing. And I think that like, that's absolutely it. Like, perfect example. I think that if I'd have been like, okay, I'm on this series of Dimension 20, I'm going to now be, you know, the next Zach Oyama, like my goal now is that I want to be an intrepid hero, and I'm just gonna constantly email Brennan every day, you know, and then like Murph says to me that night, hey, do you want to go for a drink, or do you want to, whatever, and I'm like, no, sorry, I've got to draft this fifth email to Brennan. You know, this is a very extreme example, but you, I think you get what I'm saying. I wouldn't have like gone for that drink. I wouldn't have restarted the rotating. You know what I mean? I would have missed the dude holding open the side door. And that's even like you were saying, Elliot, like whilst I'm doing the, like that job, or I'm doing like that kind of like, you know, I'm cresting that hill or whatever it may be. And I think it's like taking a breath when you can, being like, okay, this is where we're at. Looking around, I can see the window. Like, it's still there, you know what I mean? Like, there's a couple people who I'm still, you know, I'm, like, just getting into video games now, and I can see that Naughty Dog window over there, and I'm like, oh, man, come on. And I want to press my face up against it. I really do. I want to just, like, bang that thing down and be like, Neil! Mr. Neil Druckmann, please! Notice me! I do. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now on this podcast. So, Neil Druckmann, if you are listening...
Yeah, Neil Druckmann, if you're listening to this podcast, please let us know.
Genuinely.
That would be cool.
But yeah,
as
hopefully
hell.
That kind of like generally answers that question.
Oh, absolutely.
In not too long-winded a way. I feel like I've recently overcome an illness as well, so if I'm giving a lot of energy for my answers, I'm like just so excited to have energy again in my life, you know? I'm like, yes, let me give you
life
all the answers.
Life has returned to me. I must give it to the world.
I must give it.
Jasper, we've kind of reached the end of this conversation.
I'm genuinely sad. This has been a really, this is like genuinely been fun. You were asking me about what the like something that would make this interview really cool for me. And actually just like having a really nuanced conversation about like the creative process and everything is just like, it's not something I get to nerd out about every day. And I really appreciate getting the opportunity to do that. So genuinely, thank you. This has been really fun.
Thank you. I mean, hey, that's why we made the show, because we also wanted an excuse to nerd out about it to more people than just me and Elliot. It's how every podcast starts. Like, hey, we're having really interesting conversations. We should make a podcast.
Yeah, we should share this with the world.
But Jasper, we always like to end this show with a segment called What Are You Bringing to the Table? It's the last question we always ask our guests. And this is our kind of cute, fun way of just asking you to recommend something to the audience. It could be a person, a game, a show, a resource. Could be inside tabletop. Could be outside of tabletop. Could be someone you know that you want to highlight who is currently a knocking at the window person, but you want to make them a enter the front door person, you know?
Oh, yeah.
What's something or someone you'd like to recommend?
Okay, someone I want to recommend. Oh, my God, there's so many people. And now I feel like there's like 1,000 people that I'm going to like not say. But I'd love to. London Carlyle and Edward Spence. Just two people at the top of my my list right now. London Carlyle, I actually met properly in person for the first time recently at D&D in the Castle, and is as delightful as I thought he would be, just through having, you know, he ran Harlem by Night. Cthulhu. It was a Call of Cthulhu, but it's the Harlem Unbound. That's the one. Ran that for us on Three Black Halflings a little while ago. And he's just a really phenomenal, really talented person. Love his work. And then recently, Edward Spence DM'd for me. I was just blown away by his storytelling. He's genuinely got such a beautiful way of like weaving the narrative. And I think it's a skill, like a storytelling skill. I almost feel like a gene. Like, I feel like some people just have it, you know? And I generally don't even class myself in that. I just think I class myself as an A-class bullshitter who's just, like, really good at kind of, like, giving you what you want to hear. But there are some people that are just, like, genuine orators, you know? Like Brennan's in that kind of category where I'm just like, damn, man, the way you spit words is just, like, it just moves something in my soul. And Ed is DMing some Fourth Age for me, over on the Wounded Warriors project on Twitch, and it is it's some of the best role playing I feel like I've ever done. And it's just like on a crappy Zoom call, you know, but we just like had a whole scene where like my character met Elrond. Oops, spoilers, but it's worth watching, you know. And I was like, I was in my bag clapping in my mind, being like, oh, Elrond, oh my god, you know, because he was just, you know, he really like told such a good narrative and such a good story. And and so, yeah, I'd love to shout out those two in particular. They're great, great people.
Ed Spence and I are slowly beginning a romance from across the pond.
As I
fell in love with Beyond the Brook and his Orbital Blues season. And then we just got to perform together on One Shot playing Orbital Blues.
That's how he gets you, man.
Ed,
right?
We love you.
That's how he gets you, right, Ed? Like he just gets his hooks into you. And anyway, he's now working on this TTRPG that I'm working on because I was like, hey, you're really good at this. Come over here.
Hell yeah!
I didn't really give him a choice either. I was just like, hey, Ed, I need you. Come here. And he was like, okay, fine.
All right, fine. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, I guess. I don't know what for. Take up my time.
Hell yeah! I'm going to move to an outro unless, Jasper, is there anything else you wanted to make sure you got in or any last minute thoughts, feelings, anything?
No, I mean, I do this because it was one thing that someone did on specifically Jake Hurwitz did, and I just really liked it, and I always thought I'd carry on doing it, which is like, just if there is anyone, for whatever weird reason, is here specifically listening to this episode because of me, please stick around. You know, subscribe to these guys, listen to their other shows. Like, they're lovely people, and it would mean a lot to me if you would show them some love as well, because they've shown me some love today, and I really appreciate it. So just, like, if you happen to be here because you're listening to me, then stick around and subscribe to the show and everything, because these guys are awesome.
I love that.
We got a lot of good stuff on here. Check it out.
yeah, do that.
Thank you, Jasper, for coming to the table. Do you want to tell people where they can find you online if they're looking for you?
Please. It's at JW_Cartwright on all social medias. That's where you'll find me very infrequently posting and then sort of very intensely posting for like a period of 24 hours before I forget about social media again. And you can check out Three Black Halflings, you can check out Rotating Heroes, all of which are available on like link trees or whatever. I'm so bad.
It's terrible. It'll all be linked in the
show notes. Some people I know will rattle off like their plugs in such a professional way, and I'm just like, damn, imagine having your life together enough to do that. I wouldn't me, not me, couldn't be. You know what I mean? Definitely couldn't be me.
Amazing.
Well, if you want more gaming content from us, check out the 20-sided newsletter and the many-sided media Discord. Both of those will be linked in our show notes.
Look at that. That was so good. Nice point.
To be nice fair, point. I've got it written down right in front of me.
the thing is, I'm on that many shows, including my own. At some point, I should just write it down. You know what I mean? It probably makes sense to have it written down, is what I'm saying. It's good. You know?
And that is all for us. Please rate, review, and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what The Table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Woo-hoo.